Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to this special Between Takes episode of Missing Frames. I'm your host, Sean Eastridge. Now, normally on Missing Frames, we watch all the movies we should have seen by this point in our lives, but every so often we like to take a break to chat with the incredible people who actually make all those movies. So today, we're talking with the amazing producers at Vanishing Angle about their new film, The Beta Test, written and directed by Jim Cummings and PJ McCabe. Those producers are Natalie Metzger, Matt Miller, and Ben Wiesner. You know about them. They've been on here before. They're awesome and amazing, so you're going to love this. We have lots of great discussions about the film subject matter. Jim and PJ kind of were like, hey, let's take on the creepy agencies and Hollywood's seedy inner workings. We talk about how PJ, co-directing and co-writing with Jim, actually encouraged Jim to push the bar as far as characters and story to make them even more weird and sleazy. We also discuss how the film was crowdsourced and an amazing community came together to actually fund the movie and what a privilege it is to have such amazing fans who are so passionate that they actually fund the project. It's really, really great. So if you want to learn more about The Beta Test and where you can see it, head to thebetatest.movie. You can find out where it's playing, if it's playing in a theater near you. It's also on VOD, I believe, on Amazon, Apple, and all those other places if you want to check it out from the comfort of your own home. Also, make sure that you are following Vanishing Angle. You can find them at Vanishing Angle, I think, on all platforms, Twitter, Instagram. They're great, an amazing company doing great, great work. So without further delay, let's go ahead and get to the interview. I hope you enjoy it.
Now available to own on video cassette.
Okay, so first of all, this movie is insane and wonderful, so congratulations. It's doing gangbusters. Do people still say that, gangbusters? You guys must be very, very happy.
Yeah.
We are. Yeah, we're really excited with the response.
Well, I'm happy in general, but I'm a little disappointed about one thing, and I will say this. So Natalie, I saw you in the film, very excited about that. Ben, I saw you in the film and was delighted. Matt, I hear you are in the film. You have a cameo. Why did I not see you?
It's largely my my best side, the back of my head, that appears in many scenes. I'm in the bar scene. I'm in, I don't want to give any spoilers. I'm in other scenes, but I don't have any like beautiful close-ups like some of the other producers.
Well, next time, this is what I need. So I'm going to put it on the record right now. I want to know what each of you, and I guess, Natalie, we'll start with you. Do you remember your first glance at Jim and PJ's script for The Beta Test? And did you look at it, or did they kind of pitch it to you and say, this is what we're working on next? And what was your reaction to that?
I mean, they mentioned like very like tangentially, like, oh yeah, this is like this like crazy, you know, agent story. And then, yeah, I remember reading it and just being like, fuck yeah. there was one line in it that really stood out to me, which is, we don't need agents to package anything for us. We don't need agents to pretend to be producers. And I remember just like reading it, and I think I like literally snapped during it of like, yeah, that feels about accurate. But no, I mean, I was just super excited also to see Jim exploring, like, I mean, it's a similar like vibe of a role, but it's such a different role. It's not a cop. It's, you know, and it's like, and it's like a very just different, it's just like such a different vibe, it feels like. I mean, like erotic thriller.
I feel like with every role he does, he's getting more and more despicable. Like, he's getting more and more willing to just be like, you know what, why bother being likable? Let's just go completely despicable and horrible. But with that like touch of humor and humanity that makes it still enjoyable to watch. Like, you hate him, but you don't hate yourself for watching. But Ben, Matt, like, how do you feel? Like, did you feel the same way reading about this, thinking like, oh my God, we're really going for this and we're attacking this subject, taking on agencies, Hollywood, all that stuff?
One of the biggest surprises for me was PJ and Jim had been talking about doing entire film in basically one apartment complex. So that definitely didn't come across once I finally saw the script. But no, it was just this real thrill to see this growth of a lot of the kind of ploys of how to move an audience through scenes just really seemed to match the material and match this kind of exciting thriller aspect of it, that it felt like there were kind of the favorite, my favorite things about Jim and PJ's humor in it, while at the same time, them really coming up to the level of all of these new challenges.
How about you, Matt?
I think I'm the rare exception that read the script that did take place in one location. I was just looking back to figure out when that was. I got a draft, it looks like March 23rd of 2019. And it was, the draft I got was 52 pages. It was like, I think I just happened to get it because I was in the office late night when Jim and PJ were working on it. And the way Jim and PJ work is that they talk everything out loud. They like act the scenes out together. So I heard them shouting at each other and thought I had to break up a fight, and then realized that they were working on this project. And so I went in and just asked if I could read the sort of work in progress. It was a 52-page version. And it surprisingly was lighter on a lot of the agency stuff. And I think what Jim talks about is he had shown myself and a couple other people, and the McManus brothers, who Jim's worked with on a couple of projects, were the ones I think that came back and said, like, the agency stuff's where like the heart of this film is, and where you can really get a lot of the comedy out of it. And so PJ and Jim started to think about that. And at the time, the WGA packaging fight was happening. And I think that's when they really started to realize, like, oh, there's like a real tie to what's happening to this other story that we're telling through these envelopes that are being sent out to sort of lure people into this illicit behavior, and that we can kind of tell two stories in one. And then within that, they start saying, like, well, we don't know this world as well as we should. Let's start talking to people who work at these agencies. And they started putting feelers out and got, I think they said 11 people who worked at agencies to sort of break their NDAs and start telling stories. And then they started mining actual scenes out of what was told to them, to the point where I think we shot a scene where Jim is yelling at his assistant. Jim's character is yelling at his assistant. And Jim realized after shooting how sort of close to the real testimony it was. So he called this person, was like, I think you might get in trouble. Like, we shot this scene and it's like almost verbatim what you told us. And she was like, oh, he'll never remember saying that stuff. Like, he does that every day, you know.
Is there anything else, any other stories you heard that ended up in the script that were just like, you wouldn't believe it was real, but no, it's in the movie and it actually happened?
One of the ones is there's a scene in the film where Jim's character Jordan gets groped by somebody, and he ends up pretty upset about it. And that's based on testimony from Terry Crews, who was groped by his agent, but twice at the same party. And so when Jim and PJ were writing it, they specifically like didn't write it happening twice, because they were like, the audience just won't believe that. Like, at that point, they won't believe why he's still working with this guy that's happened to him twice. But it's sadly based on a real event that happened to somebody.
I love Vanishing Angle's whole like philosophy is do it yourself. Like, let's do it. We don't need the middlemen. We don't need anybody telling us what we can and can't have access to. Like, we have the resources and we have the amazing talent, so let's just do it. And there's a great documentary that, you know, anyone listening, if you haven't watched it, check it out. It's on YouTube. I think it's just The Making of the Beta Test or something like that. If you look that up, you'll be able to find it. But there's a lot of talk about that. And in general, like you said, the film kind of started off, I think, just as the infidelity thing. Like, what would happen if there was the secret society, or somehow you were getting these envelopes that allowed, like, that opened the door to secret sexual encounters with anonymous partners, and tying in the agent stuff. Why is it so important for you guys to not necessarily cut these huge, huge companies out of the picture entirely, but why might they be unnecessary? Why is it more important for everyone to do it themselves?
Well, I mean, we're heading into our 21st feature film in 2 weeks into production.
Congrats.
Thanks. And
old enough to drink. You officially have a filmography that's old enough to drink.
Yeah, exactly. For a lot of those films, you know, a lot of it was, you know, working with actors that we had previous relationships with, or, you know, actors that were recommended, or even just like actors that came in and auditioned for us that we just fell in love with and were so impressed by, that we started casting them in, you know, in so many things. And along the way, we've worked with some great agents who have been, like, you know, helpful, but those have honestly been, you know, a little a little rare. They're, you know, few and far between. And we've also interacted with agents that have been horrible, that have, you know, completely nucleared, you know, projects, you know, just kind of like for really no reason at all, or just like, you know, like used very disrespectful language, or just like had like such an ego. And so, yeah, I mean, I think agents can be, you know, like really great resources for people if they have the right approach. But like for so many of them, it's just a money game. It's an ego game. And it actually has nothing to do about the best thing for their clients. And we've worked with a lot of writer, directors, and actors. And a lot of the, you know, when they're switching over from acting to directing or directing to acting, one of the things that they'll like, you know, realize sometimes is they'll see the other side of it, of being actors and then being like, oh, I didn't know that my client was telling production this. Like, I had no idea. Like, I didn't want them to say that. Like, they're misrepresenting my thoughts. And we've been straight up lied to, where, you know, agents said that they sent a script to their client and then didn't. You know, we are friends with the client or have a connection to like to the client, that we ask them directly and they say, no, I never got the script. Like, I would absolutely do it. And then they end up being in the film, you know. But like, we've had to actually call out agents just for straight up lying to us. And so, yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's just.
So there's a little bit, I mean, there's just a little bit of satisfaction with a movie like this, getting to put this out there and seeing the reaction to it. And I mean, do you think a lot of this is just a sense of desperation on the agent? I know that this is always kind of the stereotypical vibe of an agent, is this kind of behavior. And like you said, the rudeness, the lying, and that sense of ego where it's like, I have the power here, I'm the person in control. And I think, as Vanishing Angle has proven, as Jim with his movies have proven, those boundaries are kind of really collapsing, especially in the age of the internet. So do you think it's just getting more and more desperate? Do you think people are just becoming more and more ruthless? Or is there like a sense in general that like, yeah, these hierarchies don't really need to exist anymore?
I think it's, you know, listen, it's less of like, we don't need these people. It's more of we don't believe you have to have these people to be successful. And I think that's the thing, like so much of it's built around a manipulation of like an idea that like that there are gatekeepers, that the only way you can put a film together and have it be successful is by utilizing certain relationships and going through agencies or having a sales agent or having a distributor. And like the way we look at it is that the most important thing is having a solid team and having the right team members to execute your project, and that you can find those team members in an agent or manager. You can find those team members in a sales agent. You can find those team members in a distributor, and they can be great and they can be perfect for your film and really help get it out into the world. We wouldn't have the release we have for the beta test without IFC's involvement, which has been phenomenal. But I think what we're trying to do is shatter the myth that you have to have these things. And like, I think that's the ego part of it, is that there's a currency these people tread on, which is this like myth of power, this like, you know, that they hold all the cards, and for you to get into the game, you've got to buddy up next to them. And like, that's just, it's false. And it's stopping great creativity. It's stopping access for a lot of people that are really unique voices that don't think they have a chance to tell their story. And that's really what we're fighting. Like, that's the thing we're viscerally against. And that's the thing, like, yes, if we take any satisfaction in knocking someone down a peg, it's not because we don't like these people. It's because we don't like what they represent in the industry that says you get to tell a story and you don't, because that's just totally incorrect to us.
And using humor and these things to create this kind of permission structure to start like recognizing and building a language of like when your bullshit detector should be going off, that sense of like these repeated phrases and everything like that, and really helping draw the important distinction between real enthusiasm and somebody blowing smoke. Because that's one of the things, like why we've kind of built our films the way that we have and kind of done it on our own so much, is because of the level of enthusiasm and being able to feel what that person's going to be like on set and how they're going to contribute, not just to what's in front of the camera, but what the feeling of the set is and what the culture there is, because that's such an important thing. And it really does show up for audiences when you create an environment where everybody actually does have this love and enthusiasm. And so trying to create some of these characters and some of these moments where people can kind of start safely calling out what's unacceptable. And I think I think it was one of the early variety pieces had a really nice way of saying it, where the beta test, what it did was it created a really clear line where you were in the wrong if you were kind of disagreeing with it. Mm-hmm. If you thought it was too far or anything like that, it just made you a part of the problem.
And I think in general, it's about authenticity, right? Like it's in the movie. I mean, Jim's character, Jordan, has great difficulty connecting with anybody because he's been putting on this front for so long and is operating on such a high level of needing to sell himself or a product or whatever, that he can't connect with the people personally in his life. And it causes him to cause great damage to everyone around him and himself, but always to, again, hilarious effect. Because the movie, I mean, we're talking about a lot of issues that are real, but the movie is not like, it's for sure vitriolic in the way it kind of approaches the subject and kind of what we've all been talking about. But it's very funny and not lighthearted, but certainly very entertaining. And what do you think is the most important thing about striking that balance and working with Jim and PJ and finding those moments and trying to, I think this more than Jim's other films, and I don't know if this is something that PJ brought to the table, just like let's push it even further. Jim has always been very good at finding those very awkward human moments, but I think here in the beta test, he really pushes to the limit, like the discomfort. I think one of my favorite scenes in the entire movie, I don't want to spoil it too much, but he's starting to get more and more paranoid, and he starts to reach out to past friends to under the guise of reconnecting, but also kind of grilling them to see who's maybe playing tricks on him, who's trying to get him in trouble. These moments are so uncomfortable, but so funny. But do you think there is a line, like do PJ and Jim, were there discussions about like how far can we push this? In some cases, it feels like they were like, no, you know what, let's just go all the way. But do you remember having these conversations at all?
We definitely had a lot of conversations of this might be an issue. This isn't. But yeah, I mean, I do think, you know, PJ kind of helped embolden, you know, the both of them, because, you know, Jim has talked about how he would say, oh, I don't know, we're like kind of pushing things really far. And I think PJ's response was, burn it down, burn it down.
So it was, this is PJ's fault. Is what we're
saying. I think they egged each other on. So
they're bad for each other.
They as a team, you know, emboldened each other, which I think, you know, helped make something that's, you know, a very strong, unique film that, you know, that does say something in a, you know, in a strong way.
I love the shot of Jim, the envelope. Jim included a sequence in this documentary of just him doing take after take of the envelope dropping out. And I love Jim's obsession with Jackie Chan and the comments of just like, we're going to get this right. And is there anything in the film that you're particularly impressed you got? I know the first thing you shot was a very complex single shot with a moving camera that is just like very, very dramatic moves around two characters. But is there anything else in the film in particular, maybe without going into too many spoilers, because there's so many goodies in this film, but highlights for you that you're amazed you accomplished, or simple things that don't seem like the envelope thing is something that you see and you're like, oh great, the envelope, he caught it, that's cool, and would never imagine how much pain and suffering went into making it. But anything like that, behind the scenes tidbits?
I mean, it's probably boring, but I think the thing I'm most impressed with is all the small stuff of just, this was a very low budget film, and I think it's public knowledge. Like, we raised $350,000 on WeFunder to make the film, and we spent much less than that to actually make it. And so I think to me, when I watch it, I'm constantly amazed myself to remember how many locations we had that like this team was able to pull together and dress, and like, or how many different cast members there were, or the fact that like, we had a really seasoned stunt coordinator and stunt double to do a scene where there was a first story fall for an actor. Like, we'd never really done something like that at this budget level. The fact that we were able to provide an intimacy coordinator on set. Like, I think that's something that like would never show up on camera, but when we're making a film about this subject and calling out Hollywood for their behavior, the fact that we were able to make that a priority and work with that within the constraints of this budget, like, I feel so much pride in that, that we pulled that off. And so like, it's all those little things that I think are gonna be completely or should be completely invisible to an audience. But when I watch it, I kind of sit there and like, I just swell with pride for PJ and Jim and the producing team that like, and everybody that supported that, our, you know, production coordinators and our PAs and our like amazing G&E crew, everybody. Like there's, I really could just go down and list every single crew member. It's just really impressive for the scale of this film.
Yeah, we
it is fun watching it as kind of that like home movie, like sitting there in the audience over the weekend, just looking at it and being like, here's where everybody was, and just like remembering all the craziness of like trying to get the dolly up these stairs or trying to dress this leasing office in a like 24-hour period and all of these different things where just so many team members just made this film so much bigger and stronger than it really deserved to be, except for that thing that we were talking about of like this outpouring of love and joy and enthusiasm behind it.
We shot over 18 shoot days and we had 22 locations and 53 speaking roles and a ton of actors. So it wasn't even one location per day. There were many days that we did two different locations over the course of the day. So it was, you know, and we all wore a lot of hats. Like Ben was helping out with locations. I was first ADing. Like Matt was dealing with all like the WeFunder stuff and all of the like financing and investing, like, you know, we all wore a lot of hats, but we also really loved doing that, you know, and it's the same thing for Jim and PJ who are writing, directing and acting, and Jim's also editing. And then he even did a music cue, you know, there's, we're all kind of filling in all the gaps for each other, but I think that's why we're able to pull off something, you know, with the production value that it has with the limited resources that we have, because we have that shorthand and we know how to fill in each other's gaps so that nothing falls through the cracks.
I think COVID was kicked off right after production, like in going into post-production, or were you still filming it?
No, we filmed November of 2019. So we were good for a while. I mean, COVID really just affected post in that it extended our post timeline by a lot, just because with the, you know, festivals not happening in person, we were like, okay, well, we're not up against the festival deadline, so we have some time to actually really, really get it right. And I think it really actually helped enhance the film in a lot of ways, because it, you know, it gave the edit time to breathe, and Jim and PJ were able to kind of step away from it and come back to it and like dig in and really get nitpicky with, you know, things like the sound design and stuff that normally you're so rushed for. But I think Ben, you know, was it over 40 days that they worked on sound?
44, because Guitar Center has 45-day return policy. So, but I think kind of one of the bigger effects with the pandemic of it all was definitely like really adapting our festival strategy in a way that was quite a bit different, and trying to figure out how to really reprioritize towards physical screenings and moving away from a lot of like these really wonderful festivals that we love that have been kind of the places that have supported us over the years, and just having to make those kind of difficult decisions and kind of continually trying to like get this momentum while avoiding all of these different things that you have to slalom them around.
Go ahead, Natalie.
Oh, I was just going to say, Sean, you had asked about, you know, if there were any takes that you weren't sure we were going to be able to get, of just like, you know, the kind of repetition, you know, similar to the envelope. And I think the one that took the most takes was actually, it was just a line that Jim was giving to Jacqueline, his assistant, where he's, you know, he's kind of yelling at her. And then he says, also, I need some Pepto-Bismol right away after lunch. And we were all laughing so hard at that he would just keep on cracking up in the middle of the line. And I think, do you guys remember, was it like 18 takes or something?
It had to be at least, yeah.
Yeah, it took, it was the longest amount of takes in the movie because we were just all, I mean, one, we were having so much fun that we were laughing a lot, but like that particular line for whatever reason just was cracking us up. And so every single time he got to Pepto-Bismol, one of us would crack up. So everyone was trying to hide around the corner so that Jim couldn't see any of us cracking up because we were just all laughing so hard.
Possibly my favorite moment in the entire film is Jim preparing for, or his character preparing for a meeting, and he's in his car and he's psyching himself up and he has his teeth whitener on and he peels it off and he just says, yes. And he gets out of his car. That I think earned the biggest laugh from me. I don't even think it was the biggest laugh line in the film, but are there any moments that you love in particular? I know we're trying to avoid spoilers here, rightfully so. Everyone should be seeing this movie, but are there any little moments that you hold near and dear?
Yeah, I feel like we've covered some of them. We obviously all love the moment where he gets torn a new one about the need for agents and how they're just pretending to be producers. I think we clap every time that line is said in the theater. And I think it's one of those instances where every time you clap, an agent loses his wings. So like we incur clapping during that. And then the Pepto-Bismol line that we were just talking about is another one of our favorites too, because it was pitched by a crew member on the spot. We were doing the scene, and it's such a wonderful scene. Jim gives this amazing monologue as he tears his assistant apart, which we talked about. And then our production coordinator, who was a former VA intern, came up and said, you know what might be funny? And he said it out loud, and Jim was like, that's very funny, and threw it in. And it was sort of, you know, I love that because it's, Jim always talks about how the best idea wins and he's open to ideas from anywhere. And that was such proof of that and how little ego Jim had to like really take this line and own it. And to the point where we almost couldn't film the scene because we were laughing so hard. So those are big ones for me.
Yeah. I think for me, it's these really small moments that are just so perfectly done by just people who have been part of the Vanishing Angle family for years. So like right after that Pepto-Bismol line, our friend Maggie just has this really wonderful delivery of the word Hollywood and then goes back to just shredding documents.
She's just in the cubicle shredding documents this whole time. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a couple of those performances. Evan Hay has a couple of really lovely lines, and that's somebody who like came on to a film that we did with PJ and Jim in 2014, our first horror film, 13 Cameras. And it was just like these kind of people who could just bring such authenticity and humor and joy into those moments. Yeah.
My favorite of that is Dustin Hahn, who is a VA regular, and he, you know, he's directed for us. He directed a show we did, Taking Stock. He's acted for us. He's written, he's co-directed, but there's something about, and it was cut out of one of the cuts, and we were like, you got to put it back in. There's something about his expression when like Jim says, like, there's nobody named Johnny PayPal. And he just looks so defeated about it. Like, I don't know. I love that. His Dustin scene, I just like couldn't get enough of. And I remember we did like a speedier version of the cut, and I was like, just more Dustin. Like, you don't keep Dustin in there.
Those are all my favorites. Like, I could list a bunch of other ones, but I feel like we start to get into spoiler mode. But
yes. What coming after this, I think I asked you this when we talked about The Wolf of Snow Hollow and when we talked about Beast Beast, but coming out of the beta test, I mean, it feels like this is probably, I mean, like you said, Matt, this is a low budget film, but I feel like they're getting more and more ambitious. And as things get more and more ambitious, what have you learned from the beta test in this production that you'll carry with you into future projects?
I think it's just more affirmation of what we've been trying to build. I think for some reason, the idea of making a filmmaking community that you can continue to do things with your friends was a radical idea when we started Vanishing Angle, and like the sort of approach to it and how to go about making more economical size productions. Like, and the more I met other people like Ben and Natalie and Jim, and it brought people into the Vanishing Angle fold, the more it sort of like reaffirmed what we can do. And I think what was nice about beta was like, we had just come off of doing The Wolf of Snow Hollow, which was, I think to that point, our biggest budget to date. within the company, and to feel like we could scale up and then immediately scale back down and not lose any sense of what we've been doing, that we didn't suddenly have, you know, to have caviar at the craft service, because obviously we had that every day on Wolf of Snow Hollow. but then also to feel like we could go from beta test straight into Werewolves Within, which once again, like that was definitely our biggest budget to date, and didn't lose a sense of community within that film either. That like, I think it was that's what's been really nice is the more we do this and the more ambitious our projects get, it's really nice to feel like we're still doing it the way we've always done it and the way we wanted to do it, which is doing it with friends and keeping our priorities straight, which is treating people well, you know, supporting the director, safety, those things, and like not losing a sense of that no matter how we bounce around.
One of the things that I think I really took from it is how powerful and important it was that this is something that we raised through crowd equity funding, to have hundreds of strangers from all over the world come together and want something was such fuel, I think, for everybody on this film, and continued to be all the way through post. Like when you're sitting there in the middle of a pandemic in your stupid garage for day 43 of the sound mix to try and get this thing just right, I think it's really meaningful to know that the people that you're doing that for and with are people who really care about your work and are coming alongside you to support you. So that's such an important piece of it. And that was kind of our first time being able to do a fully crowd-funded film. And we'd love to do more. And it's just like, what a beautiful thing that like within this time period, we've been able to like not only have that experience and that journey, but then also bring all these people along with us, and that they'll be the ones who kind of benefit from it and hopefully can become film investors in a more continuous way and have that journey on their own over the years, not just with us, but with hopefully lots of other filmmakers. I mean, that was the beta test. This was us trying to figure out how to get the film that we wanted made, and relying on our audience that we had built over the years to do that. It's just so much more satisfying that way.
It's just so much about community and respect and like love. And like those things can sound, you know, like frou-frou-y or like, you know, kind of just like abstract, but working with our team on the beta test really does feels magical. Like there's no ego. We had incredible actors that have been in ginormous movies with super famous directors coming in being background in this movie, just because it was like, hey, you need someone. I don't fit the right age range for, you know, for anyone that's, you know, like any of the speaking roles. Great. I'll come and hang out. I'll be background. It was just like, and like massive actors. And it, like, that's really just so amazing to have that kind of team where there was no ego and there was just, it was so collaborative. And also the fact this was our first time, or at least my first time, working with an intimacy coordinator, and it was such a positive experience. And I think a lot of indie films are, you know, are like scared of intimacy coordinators because it's like, oh, it's like, you know, like going to be regulation or something. But it was so amazing and helpful. And you know, like having those scenes be fully choreographed ahead of time so that like one, you know, everyone felt so comfortable, and it helped, you know, Jim and PJ kind of like figure out how they wanted to shoot it. And it really felt, you know, like this safe environment. And I think that was also just like a takeaway of like how important that role is and how supportive they can be to the production, where, you know, it's like helping both the directors, the producers, and the actors all feel safe and coming together. And so that was just like a cool takeaway, and obviously like we'll continue using.
And it's like a stunt coordinator in that way of like, it's not just the safety aspect of it. You're just going to get better footage. You're going to get this thing because there's somebody who's really understands exactly what this is and how to make the most of it. So I think that's what's really neat too. It's, of course, you want to do it to make everybody comfortable, but also this person is going to make your film better.
Because we threw her some curveballs. Like there are some things and some sex scenes in the beta test that aren't your typical stuff. So
if that does not entice people to watch this, I don't know what will. But I love that, you know, love and respect. What a concept on a film set. And especially in this day and age where we've seen a lot of stories about what's going on in Hollywood and with productions and unfortunate things happening and just the nature of it, to hear things like this and to hear again what Vanishing Angle is doing, what you guys pride yourselves in, and what's so amazing to see with every production, just the care and the respect you show each other, and it comes through in the project. And the best part is, like, it pays off because the work is on screen and it's always a blast and wonderful to watch. But so this is it's in theaters right now. It's on VOD. Where is it playing right now in theaters if people want to venture out to a movie?
If you go to thebetatest.movie, it'll bring up all the different show times in your area. It's in over 30 theaters across the country. So hopefully in a city near you, you can find it. And in LA, it's playing in 5 different theaters.
And congratulations again. People do need to see it. So thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me. I appreciate it as always, and I look forward to chatting with you about future projects.
Thanks, Sean.
Thanks so much for having us, Sean.
Thanks, man.